Good morning. Today, Daf Pesachim, Daf Chaf. We're going to finish up, not totally conclude. We're going to leave ourselves a little bit off for tomorrow, but we're going to finish up the discussion on Tumat Tahara. Today is now, I believe, the seventh day of the Gemara's discussion of Tumat Tahara, a discussion that was really generated by a Mishnah, the last Mishnah of the first Perek of Pesachim. The Mishnah was just trying to make a point regarding burning Tumat Tahara with Tumat Tamei on Erev Pesach. Rav Meir says you could do that, and Rav Meir says, and I know that because Rabbi Chanina's got a Quranim, together with Rabbi Akiva. What they would be doing is they would be burning basar kachim tamea, but what they would be doing is they would be burning together different levels of tumah, and they would be mostly follow tumah, they would be adding tumah. So Rav Meir says, I think it's very basically the same thing, that it's just like they are allowing you to burn basar kachim with basar kachim, even though you're going to be adding tumah, so really, it's the same thing. I can burn my Truma Tamei with my Truma Tahara, even though I'm going to be adding Truma. The obvious question, which the Gemara has been dealing with, and basically the Gemara has been asking different forms of this question one way or another over the course of the discussion, the biggest question is, they're not really comparable cases, and we're going to see the question asked again in today's daf, and the Gemara is going to give basically the similar or same answers that we've been seeing the past couple of days. That's the basic discussion that we've been having now for almost a week. The Gemara now has an opportunity to discuss Tumat Tahara, so the Gemara made the most of its opportunity. So the Gemara spoke now about Tumas Mashkin. Tumas Mashkin became like the biggest topic of discussion over the past number of days. All the different shitos, the various opinions regarding what a Mashka is Metame, what a Mashka is not Metame. Right, Rav Yehuda was the most extreme version, where Rav Yehuda says that a Mashka is Metame Kli, which the Gemara ended up admitting that even Rav Yehuda retracted from that position. Good. That was a big discussion. And look, overall, the Gemara just took seven blot of Gemara, just a wonderful opportunity to discuss Tumat Tahara, something that we do not discuss much in the Daf Yomi, because we only cover Mesechtas that have Gemaras to them, so we don't learn together most of Seder Tahara. So only one Mesechta in Seder Tahara has Gemara, that's Mesechta Nida, but the rest of the Mesechtas don't have Gemara, so we don't have this kind of opportunity, so it really puts us in a position where we get to talk about Tumat Tahara. One of our disabilities is that we're not, and I speak about myself, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody else, we're not fluent on the halachas of Tumat Tahara. It's just simply, it's a little bit foreign to us, primarily because it's not lamaisa, it's not practical, it's not nogeya, it's something which is more more conceptual than it is practical. So that makes it a challenge for us, but once you get the basic rules, so you can converse, at least we can be conversant in the discussion of Tumat Tahara, but then once you get into the details, then you can get a little bit lost, like I feel like I've been getting over the past couple of days, but it's not so bad. There's a Mishnah in Adios. So, okay, let's now take us to today's daf. There's a Mishnah in Adios, which the Gemara quoted. The Gemara quoted the Mishnah in Adios on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph in the very bottom. The last four lines of Yutes Amud Aleph quotes this Mishnah in Adios, and again, it's just really an opportunity for the Gemara to talk to Matahara. So let's analyze this Mishnah in Adios, and based on everything we learned over the past week, we could really try to figure out how is the Mishnah working. So the Mishnah says, I'm going to review the Mishnah again, even though we did most of Yutes Amud Beis, but the Mishnah reads as follows. Tanan Hasam. I'm just reviewing the Mishnah on the bottom of Yutes Amud Beis. Amacha shenimse babasar shasakim v'yadayim taharas. So let's say you find a needle in an animal. In other words, the animal here in question is kachim, it's karban, and we shechted the animal. And then after shechting the animal, now we start cutting the meat up. And while cutting the meat up, so I find a needle in the animal. Now, the way I described it yesterday, there was like metal on metal, you heard a clank. All right, not exactly. Maybe I'm imagining a little too much. But in other words, but here's basically the story. I find a needle inside the animal. We're going to right now say that the needle is tame, although that's really speculative. And the Gemara yesterday asked the question, well, how do we know that? Okay, so let's just go through the Mishnah. So the needle's tame. And so what does the Mishnah say? Amachashim says, Babasar, Hasakim Vayadayim Taharos. So the knife and your hands are Tahor. Okay, so the knife, no need to tovel the knife. Knife still remains in the state of Tahara. Your hands as well. Vahabasar Tame. But the meat is Tame, because the needle's sitting right in the meat of the animal. Fine. That's part one of the Mishnah in Adios. Part two, Nimseis Beperish. Let's say the needle is found not only in the animal, but specifically in the excrement that's inside the animal. So Nim says, Beperesh, Hakol Tahor. Everything is Tahor, even though the needle itself is Tameh, but everything is Tahor because there's no transmission of Tuma from the needle to the excrement. And well, this is talking about after you cut it open. You're right. While inside, while internally, there's certainly not going to be transmission of Tumah. And also, while inside, the animal that's alive is not going to be susceptible to Tumah. Animal only becomes susceptible to Tumah only after it's dead and only after it's, you know, cut up pieces of meat. Doesn't have to even be cut up. Okay. That's the mission in Adios. Good. The question which we dealt with yesterday, I mean, we dealt with a number of questions yesterday, but really the basic question we dealt with yesterday is, who's saying anything about the needle? Meaning, we're having a Tumah Tahara discussion. The meat's Tameh, your hands are Tahor, the knife is Tahor, but what's the needle? The needle was where? Why am I assuming it's Tameh? In fact, we went through a Mishnah Shkalim together yesterday, where the Mishnah Shkalim says, I find Kalim in Yerushalayim, under certain circumstances, I can assume they're Tameh, but generally speaking, I'm going to assume they're Tahor. We're in Yerushalayim. People have to be in a state of Tahara in Yerushalayim. The Mishnah Shkalim says that if I find Kalim anywhere in Yerushalayim, I assume they're Tahor. So, what's going on with the needle? That's really the simplest way I could say the question. Why are we having any discussion whatsoever? Why am I assuming the needle's tummy? So, that was a difficult question, and the Gemara yesterday quoted an answer by Rav. Rav's answer was, well, maybe we know the history of this needle. Meaning, you're right. If we had no history, so then I wouldn't say anything about the needle that's found inside the animal. But it happens to be that we know the history of the needle, and what do we know about the needle? The needle was touched by Tameh Meis. Oh, okay. Tameh Meis, by the way, is talking about a person who touched human body, right? Human remains. And that person is an avatoma. And that person touched the needle. Okay, that's where we got to pretty much yesterday. The Gemara then asked a question yesterday. Well, if that's true, well, the person is an avatoma, that means the needle is an avatoma. So slow down. If the needle is an avatoma, so that means that the meat is touching right now an avatoma. So the meat's tummy. Good. That's what the Mishnah says. But if you touch the needle, you're going to be tummy. Right? The needle is a source of tuma. It's not a derivative, it's a source. So if you're touching the needle, you're going to be tummy. And furthermore, if the knife touched the needle, the knife's going to be Tameh, because once again, the needle's a source of Tumah, it's an Avatumah. So generally speaking, we say that it ain't Kli, Metameh Kli, that one Kli is not going to be Metameh another Kli, but the needle here in question, which is the same degree as Tumah, as a Tameh Meis, that means that the needle's an Avatumah, so the needle should be being Metameh, you, the person who may or may not have touched it, and the knife that may or may not have touched it. That's what the Gemara asked yesterday. And how do we conclude yesterday's Gemara? By saying, well, it's a suffix. Meaning, I don't know if I touched the needle, and I don't know if the knife touched the needle. I'm unsure. It's a suffix. Where did the suffix occur? In the temple courtyard, in the Azara. What do we say about the Azara? It's a Rishus HaRabim. I mentioned yesterday, at the tail end of yesterday's daf, that the definition of Rishus HaRabim versus Rishus Yachin is different for the world of Tumah than it is for the world of Shabbos. In the world of Tumah, Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYachin, it's just a numbers question. Two is private, three is a crowd. In the temple courtyard, the assumption is there's a lot of traffic, there's a lot of people, it's therefore Rishus HaRabim. Therefore, the contact between the needle and the person, and the needle and the knife, which is a suffix, and it's a suffix, Tumah, Rishus HaRabim, therefore we're going to conclude it's Tahor. The meat, however, we have no suffix by the meat. The needle sitting in the meat. There is no suffix regarding the meat, and therefore the meat's going to be tummy. Ad kan, that takes us through what we got through yesterday. Good. Now that we did a review of everything we saw yesterday, we're up to a new question in the Gemara. Michdi. We are 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud on your testament base. Hai macha davar she'en bo das lishal hu v'chol davar she'en bo das lishal ben v'shus rab min ben v'shus yachid sveiko tahor. A little introduction to this Gemara's question over here. Again, the rules of Suffolk when it comes to Tumah are all learned from Sota. Now, I understand Sota is not an issue of Tumah, but the Torah uses the word Tumah when describing the Sota scenario. The Sota scenario is, husband says to his wife, please stop talking to that guy, hanging out with that guy, I do not like it. And he warns her, it's what's called kinah. Kinah also means jealousy, but he warns her, And after a warning in front of witnesses, then she does stira, then she secludes herself with that man in a room. Not knowing what happened with that man in the room, she now has a status of being a sota. That's in other words, that is what's called, we're going to call it, safek tuma brishas hayachid. We don't know what happened in that room, and what's the conclusion? She is tamea. Now, tamea, again, when talking about the sota, the word tuma tahara is used a little loosely. It just simply means that she now has a status of a sota. She can't be with her husband. Her next step is going to be, she's going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and she's going to drink the water. But until she does so, she's prohibited to her husband. Even though it's a suffix. We don't know what happened. So in other words, that's the prototype case of suffix tuma brishas yachid. And that's where all suffix tumas learn from. So now, let's translate. When we have a case of suffix tuma brishas yachid, that means that I have a question of whether or not there was contact between one item and another. If that questionable contact took place in a private area, safek tuma brishas yachid is tameh. If it took place in a public area, safek tuma brishas rabim is tahor. Good. That's all the baseline. Then the Gemara, a number of places, right here is one of them, a number of places says, okay, but there's another point that you have to gain from the prototype. Again, the prototype case is talking about the woman secluding with the man. We don't know what happened. Now, it's true, we could ask. We could say to the woman, what happened in the room? We could say to the man, what happened in the room? Now, truth be told, regardless of what they say, she's going to have status. Really, the fact that they could talk is not really relevant to what her status is going to be. But the idea is that a suffix occurred with people who have intellect. And therefore, and that's the prototype case. Now we're going to move to every scenario of suffix tuma. And what we're going to say is that all the cases of safek tuma brishos yachid have to involve people with intellect. Meaning, let's say the person may or may not touch the sherets. Good. That's a good case study. Very similar to the prototype, where I can ask the person, did you or did you not touch? Now again, his answer is irrelevant. I don't know. The idea is, however, is that just like in the case of sota, you have to be able to question people, not that we're going to, but yesh bo das lishael, so too, in all the cases of safek tuma, there has to be a person there, I have to be able to ask a question to a person. So what bothers the Gemara right now is the following. Let's take a look at this case in the Mishnah Nedios. The knife may or may not have touched the needle. The needle's tameh, and the knife is not, and there may or may not have been contact. And we are calling this now a safek tuma. Wait a second. Let's interrogate the needle. Okay.
You can ask the person.
Oh, just one second. You're already at the answer. I'm setting it up. Right. I'm throwing the pitch right now, and we're going to hit it out. But just let me set it up. Let's interrogate the needle. Okay. Needle. What do you got to say? Okay. You're not going to get much out of the needle. Fine. Let's turn to the knife. Knife. What do you got to say? Okay, meat, what do you got to say? So in other words, obviously, I mean, I'm not being silly, but I'm just obviously trying to make a point over here. There's no intelligence, there's no intellect on the part of the needle, the knife, or the meat. So the Gemara wants to know, whenever we have a discussion of safek tuma, there's got to be intelligence, there's got to be people to ask. So, how is that working over here?
I would think if there's no people to ask, then it would definitely be tuma. Right.
Why are we going to the side of Tahara? Right. As I'm sure you probably know, the Rambam writes that really min haTorah all suffik is mutter. It's a chumr de Rabbanan that we're going to be machmir by suffik, but really all suffik is really meikar adin is going to be mutter. This would be a support for the Rambam's position, but okay, again, that's already off the daf. What just happened? I just steamrolled right over the question, right over the answer. Let me do this again. I apologize. So, michti. Hi, macha, davish embo das lishal, the needle. There's no interrogation of the needle. V'chol davish embo das lishal. And if there is no if I can't interrogate anybody, so, bein brishas harabim, bein brishas yachid, sfeiko tahor. The halacha is that it's going to be tahor. So, why over here are we engaging in a discussion of, well, the safek and In other words, there's nobody to ask. So the Gemara answers, and Ben, basically this is what you were saying. Amar Rav Yochanan, no. Mishum Dehavi Safik Toma Hababi De Adam. The Gemara's answer is, you're right. In terms of the needle, I can't ask the needle any questions. In terms of the knife, I can't ask the knife any questions. But the knife didn't just get there. The knife was being held by a person. So even though the question of Tumma is on the knife, and the question of Tumma is on the needle, well, the needle we know is tummy, but the question of Tumma is on the knife, but a knife being held by the person, it's almost as if there's a carryover of intelligence. Meaning that the knife had, there's a number of ways you could say it, but basically, the person holding the knife is transmitting his das over to the knife, so therefore the knife is considered as if it has das lishal. So, the mishum dehavi safik toma hababi de adam. Amar Rav Yochanan safik toma hababi de adam nishalan aleha afilu bekli amunach agabe karka kid davar sheish bo das lishal. Even if the object is on the floor, even though the object hadn't go through anything. In other words, as Rashi explains. Look at the second Rashi on Chaf Amud Aleph. Rashi says, Klomar, Afagav dekli tarzeh shenolad bein asafek, ein bo das lishal bo, lo haya adam osek sheim olicho mevio biyado. Even if the object in question didn't move at all, and is totally inanimate. Ava adam osek betumah shaya anosek sheret biyado, safek naga bekli safek lo naga. Let's say, for example, says Rashi, let's say I have a guy holding a sheretz. Okay, obviously the sheretz is an avatama. And there's a box on the floor, and it may or may not have touched the box. So again, the question of tumma is on the box. You're right. You sit the box in a room and say, you know, did you or did you not touch the sheretz? Box knock is not going to have much to say. And the box is not even being held by a person. Still, as long as there were human involvement in the suffix, even though the item that's being questioned right now, or the item that's experiencing the suffix, wasn't even handled by the person, and it was just stationary on the floor, it doesn't matter, as long as there was some human involvement in the suffix, so then it meets the criteria of yesh bo das lishal. And so therefore, we're going to fall back to our basic rules of suffix tuma. Suffix tuma b'rishas yachit tami. Suffix tuma b'rishas harabim tower. Good. Okay. V'abasar tameh. Good. So we're going to be spending a good part of our day today, about half of our day today, discussing this mission in Adios. Okay. I reviewed the mission at the beginning of the daf. Okay, so good. So now we have a story about the needle. We have a history of the needle. Needle, we know it wasn't came into contact with the tameh mace. Okay, what do we say? We say that the knife and your hands are tahor, because it's safik tuma. This took place in the Azara. Safik tuma b'rishos harabim. It's going to be tahor. Wonderful. What about the meat? Meat's tame, because there's no safik by the meat. The needle is sinning in the meat. So the meat, therefore, is going to be tame. The Gemara is attacking this Mishnah from a different perspective. In order for any food to become tame, meat's food, in order for any food to become tame, it has to first be mukhshir l'kabal tuma. It needs to come into contact with the liquid. Where's the liquid? Gemara asks exactly this question. So, v'abasar tame. Hi, basar diskasha b'mai. What liquid touched the meat? Ename diskasha b'dam. Okay, so the first argument will be blood. We know that there are seven liquids that are machshir, food to be mekabel tuma. One of the seven liquids is blood. So the argument right now, the first argument we can make is the blood of the animal itself. The Gemara says there are technical issues. It's dam kachim. Remember, it's a carbon that we're talking about. The blood of a carbon is not a machshir. Shenemar, it's a pasuk. Lo sochlanu ha'arz tishpechanu kamayim, dam shenishpach kamayim, machshir, v'shenu nishpach kamayim, eino machshir. It has to be blood that is spilled on the ground. We know that the blood of kachim, the blood of a carbon, by definition, is not to be spilled on the ground. It is supposed to be captured in a cup, brought to the Mizbeach, sprinkled on the Mizbeach. So in other words, it just simply is not a machshir, because there is a kosef. Okay, fine. So the, damatamsis, right? We talked about earlier how that also is not going to be a machshir. Right. Okay. So the elad is kasher b'mashke beis mitzbachaya. The Gemara says, okay, fine. So the blood of the animal itself is not going to be the machshir. But we know that every time you shecht an animal in the Beis HaMikdash, what's the next step? We clean it. We take it to the north side of the temple courtyard, where there are their hooks and their pillars, and we lay the animal down, we hang the animal on the hooks, and what do? Spritz it with water. We clean it out, because parts of the inside are going to go up under the Mizbeach. And so what we would like to do is we would like to have it nice and clean and presentable before putting it on the Mizbeach. Good. So that's called water. So the Gemara's argument right now, a very simple argument, let the water be the machshir. So the Gemara says, okay, let's remember what we learned about 4 days ago in the sugya of Rabbi Chanina, which is, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara, water is A, not Tamei. Right, we had a discussion between Rav and Shmuel, debate between Rav and Shmuel, meaning not Tamei at all, or is it Mekabel Tumah, but does not transmit Tumah. Right now, let's just assume the former. Let's assume that's not Tamei at all. And furthermore, not only is it not Tamei at all, it's simply not going to be a Machshir. So in other words, the liquids in the Azara don't have the status of liquid. Good. So, not good, I'm saying, but in other words, we have a problem. How did the meat become mukhshir lekabel tumah? The elad is kasha b'chibas hakodesh. So the Gemara says, I know how the meat became tameh, or, I'm sorry, not tameh, mukhshir lekabel tumah, using, once again, the principle of chibas hakodesh. Second time we're talking about the principle of chibas hakodesh. Chibas hakodesh is, again, this idea that even though normally certain things don't become tameh, but because we're in the Beis HaMikdash and because we're in the Azara, it gets elevated status. We talked about Chibas HaKodesh a couple days ago in relationship to non-food items, Ketores, and Soles, and Lavona, and Eitzim, that are going to go up onto the Mizbech. Because these items are going to go up onto the Mizbech, even though they're non-foods, so they're going to be Mekabel Tumah. Well, the Gemara now is going to take this idea of Chibas HaKodesh and apply it also to foods, but foods that were not mukhshir lekabel tumah. Even though they were not mukhshir lekabel tumah, but because of this concept of chibas hakodesh, we're going to take something which the general status is it's not mekabel tumah and give it status because we're in the Beis HaMikdash. This concept of chibas hakodesh. So the Gemara says, "Ema dama hanya le chibas hakodesh leafsu le gufe." Gemara says, "Look." Chibas HaKodesh is an elevated status. I do understand that. But generally speaking, what we say is that it'll passel the food. Passel over here, as we discussed time and again, means in the world of Tumah, that it becomes Tumah, but it doesn't transmit Tumah to something else. It's the cul-de-sac of Tumah. So I understand that it's going to passel the meat, or it's going to passel the Ketores. But the idea of Chibas HaKodesh generating enough tumah so that not only A, it becomes tumah, but B, then transmits tumah to something else, does Chibas HaKodesh work to that degree? In other words, does Chibas HaKodesh basically give it full status? So, lememne be Rishon v'sheni, where we could start counting now Rishon v'sheni, meaning, can we now say, well, Chibas HaKodesh gives us full status, it's now a Rishon. Remember, the knife itself, or the needle, I should say, was an Avatama. That means that the meat is now going to be a Rishon. And do we now say that since the meat's a Rishon, then whatever the meat touches is going to be a Sheni, etc., etc.? Does Chibas HaKodesh give it full status? Sheni Nami, Tifshu Dabai Reish Lakish. And in fact, this very question, whether or not Chibas HaKodesh gives something full status of Tumah, is a question that was posed by Reish Lakish. The Gemara quotes Reish Lakish a number of times. You can see on the side of the Gemara, and Chulin, and Menachos. To buy Reish Lakish, Srid Shal Menachos. I have the dry mincha. Dry mincha meaning there's no oil. It is just basically kernels or little pieces of wheat or barley that are next to one another. And again, they're not mukhshir lekabel tumah. Tumah touched one particle. Is it going to now transmit the tumah to the next particle through the basic concept of Rishon to Sheni to Shlishi to Revi? And remember, it's Kodesh. We're not going to go any further than Revi. In other words, can Chibas HaKodesh do that? Or is Chibas HaKodesh should simply mean that the one particle that was touched by the Avatumah is Tameh, but that's it. So the Gemara said,
didn't you learn that if they're in the same container?
Yeah, so, right. A, you're right. So, maybe the Gemara over here is talking about where the mincha is not in a container, although that's unusual. Okay, but your point is very well taken. So mona borishon v'sheni olau. So, and he asks the question, and the Gemara just kind of awkwardly leaves us off over here, meaning, and he didn't resolve the question, and now you're assuming that Chibas HaKodesh is going to take the meat of the animal and give it status that not only is it going to become tummy from the needle, but then it's going to be metame something else. We simply don't know. So again, let's just quickly recap. We have a Mishnah Adios talking about the needle found in the meat of the animal, of a carbon. The question on the table is, how did the meat become mukshir l'kabel tumah? The blood is not going to be a machshir. The liquid in the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be a machshir. Maybe Chibas HaKodesh is going to be a machshir. The Gemara says, but I'm not sure. It gives it some status. I don't know if it gives it full status. We continue in the Gemara. I'm reviewed on Mashmoke Goshai Sapar Shal Zivche Shlamim, Ve'evir Benar Vishachta Ve'adai Mashke Tofei Chalaha. So the Gemara gives another answer in terms of how could be Moksha, how can the meat could be Moksha. A really simple answer, I think it's simple, but basically, when we walked the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, there was a big puddle right in our way, and what we had to do is we had to walk through the puddle. And as we got to the base of Mikdash, wasn't that far a walk from the puddle to the base of Mikdash, the animal has not yet dried. So therefore, there's still liquid on the animal. Obviously, we go through the whole process of shechting the animal, cutting the animal up, and we find the tummy needle inside the animal while the hide of the animal is still wet. Moksha, by the way, doesn't mean that every part of the animal has to come into contact with the liquid. It just simply means part of the animal has to come into contact with the liquid. And the Gemara says, and that's how we could arrive at this point of being machshir. The answer needs more analysis and more discussion, because generally speaking, for water to haphazardly fall on an item is not enough going to be a machshir, as we've spoken about time and again. By the very definition of machshir, you have to want the water there, you have to want the liquid over there. The Gemara doesn't give us any more detail other than what we see right here in the Gemara. Okay. Another suggestion in terms of how the meat could have been mukshel kabel tumah. The next part of the Mishnah in Adios, again, you could look back on Daf Yutet Amud Aleph. What if the needle is found in the excrement of the animal? Okay, so a good cleaning of the animal, and what happens is that not only, in other words, by the way, by the imurim, by the insides of the animal, the intestines are going to go up onto the mizbech and they clean the intestines out. So they're going to. Obviously, there's going to be excrement that's going to come out, and there's needle found in the excrement. What the Mishnah Adios say? That if the needle, which we know is tummy, is found in the excrement, hakol tahor, everything becomes tahor. Everything remains tahor. Okay? The Gemara discusses this part of the Mishnah in Adios. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava, sorry, let me read the question first. Nim says, "Beperesh akotar v'nehader perish v'nitmaya lebasser." The Gemara suggests, "Well, why don't we say that the perish should become tamei, and then in turn be metame the basser?" Now, let's—I know this is really indelicate, but let's think about this question for just a moment. Well, the Gemara is suggesting that the excrement itself should be mekabel tuma. Okay, let's slow down. What is susceptible to tuma? Kalim. Food, liquid, okay? And again, depending on, right, if it's an avatoma, so it's going to be, right, and humans as well. You're right. Good. I mean, in other words, you have to fit into a category. The Gemara right now is suggesting that the excrement should first be mekabeltoma from the needle sitting inside the excrement, so the excrement should be mekabeltoma, and then in turn be metame the basar. But excrement is none of the above. In other words, in your list of things that are mekabel tumah, excrement is not a keli, it's not a food, it's certainly not a human, it's none of the above.
Didn't we say that if food became non-edible, it would be somewhere else?
Correct, we did say that.
So this is like
and there's no reason, I'm going to say no, but I'll say it right now. There's no reason why the excrement should become tumah, so it's a simple question, meaning, well not a simple question, but We have to wonder, what's the Gemara thinking when the Gemara is suggesting that the excrement itself should be mekabel tumah? Now, you'll see in the answer what the Gemara thought in the question. So let's do it that way. Let's read the answer and then we'll go back and we'll revisit the question. So the Gemara says it wasn't a loose stool. The Gemara says it was a hard stool. Okay, now that we know the answer, now we can go back to the question and now we'll have a better understanding of what the Gemara thought. What the Gemara thought is that it was a loose stool, obviously, meaning because the answer was it's a hard stool. Now, if it's a loose stool, so again, what was our categories of things that could become tame? Food, liquid, kalim, and human beings are mekabel tuma. They could be the recipient of tuma. So obviously, as a hard stool, it's none of the above. As a loose stool, what the Gemara thought in the question is that for something to be an ochel, it has to be edible. For something to be a mashke, doesn't have to be edible. Right? You understand? Yeah. Understand what the Gemara thought in the question? If it was a loose stool, which obviously was the thought, thinking of the Gemara and in the question, so then it falls under the category of mashke, and mashke doesn't have to be edible. Mashke just simply has to be something in liquid state. That's it. And therefore, the perish should be mekabel tumah as a mashke, and then transmit the tumah over to the meat of the animal. Okay. That's what the Gemara was thinking, and then the Gemara says, but it's not a loose stool, it's a hard stool. Rav Ashi amar afilo tebe perish racha. Rav Ashi says, let's go back to what we thought originally, that it was a loose stool. Mishum da'ave mashke saruach. Second time we are introduced to this idea of mashke saruach, which is, it is a disgusting liquid. In other words, what the Gemara now is introducing to us is that our assumption was wrong. We thought that mashke just simply means anything in a liquid state. Not necessarily. If it's something in a liquid state but disgusting, putrid, so then in the world of Tumah Tahara, it's not going to be a recipient of Tumah. So even if the stool is loose, even if it's in a liquid form, it does not matter. It's saruach, and therefore the needle is not going to be metame the perish. Okay. Adkan, that takes us now through the end of the Mishnah Nedios. Wonderful. We now have an understanding, certainly a better understanding of the Mishnah Nedios. We continue in the Gemara.
So what happened with the needle?
So the needle itself, is just to recap the Mishnah Nedios, the needle we know is the Tamei Mace. Okay. The meat that the needle was found in is obviously going to become Tamei, because the needle's sitting there. The knife and the human being are not going to become tummy because they don't know if they touched the needle, may or may not have touched the needle. It's a suffix. This all took place in the courtyard. Suffix tuma brishos harabim sfeiko tahor. Any death that takes place in the brishos harabim is tahor. So that's why the human and the knife are not going to become tummy. As far as the excrement, the second half of the Mishnah in Adios, so the Gemara suggested. That if it were a loose stool, it would be a mashke, and therefore there should be a transmission of tumah. Two answers over here. Either number one, it's not a loose stool, it was a hard stool, and so therefore it's not a mashke, it's certainly not an ochel, it's nothing that can be the recipient of tumah. Answer number two, it's a loose stool, but the concept of mashke saruach.
The needle
stays covered. The needle is an avet tumah.
And
still, right. If come into contact with anyone, it could still be metame tuma. That's where you get out the wooden chopsticks to get the needle out of the base of Mikdash.
What happens to this idea that fence in terms of swallowing
the tuma balua, right. So the idea of tuma balua is that while the needle is internal, so there's no tuma that will be transmitted from in to out. But we're now discussing the animal being cut up and an exposure of the needle. So it's no longer balua. Then you, in other words, the needle is not going to lose the tumah. All tumah balua means is that the tumah is not going to get transmitted to something else, but it's still tameh. Right? God forbid, the dead fetus inside the mother. So tumah balua means that the tumah is not going to transmit outside, but once the fetus comes out, the stillborn comes out, so then the tumah is going to be transmitted. Okay, well, hold on. We're coming back. Okay, Tini Tana Kama de Rav Sheshes, the Gemara quotes the Braisa that was taught in front of Rav Sheshes, Sheretz Matamis Amashkin, and the Braisa goes like this. Now, you know how, generally speaking, this is going to work. Meaning, if the Gemara is telling us a story about how a Braisa is being edited in front of another Amora, so we're going to see the editing process. Meaning, we're going to understand why the Braisa needs to be edited. We always get set up for this type of scenario. Here's the Braisa being set in front of Rav Sheshet, and Rav Sheshet is going to look at the Braisa, and he's basically going to say, that's not right, and he's going to have to edit the Braisa. So, here we go. The Sheretz is Metamis, the Mashkin, so the Sheretz is Metamis, Mashkin, Mashkin, Metamis, that Kli. And then, the liquid in turn is going to be Metamis, a Kli. Now, at this point in time, we could pause in the middle of the Braisa and say, what? What just happened? Meaning, I understand Sheretz is Metame Mashka. That we get. Sheretz is an Avatama, and the Mashka is a Mashka, so therefore a recipient of Tama. Mashka would be a Rishon. And then it's going to be Metame Akli. Now, we did speak a number of occasions how, rabbinically speaking, Mashka is Metame Akli, but it sounds like from our Gemara over here that we're discussing on some sort of Daraisa level. There is an opinion of Rav Yehuda, not to get too involved, there is an opinion of Rav Yehuda a couple days ago in the Daf, Sunday's Daf, I believe, who says that Mashke is Metame a Kli. But if you remember, the Gemara ended up saying, right, he retracted. He took away that position. He laid it out there, but he took it back. So it could be that right now the author of this Braisa is Rav Yehuda, but let's just read the Braisa and then we'll do the editing, or we'll watch the Gemara do the editing of the Braisa. So Sheretz Metame a Mashke, Mashke Metame a Kli, Ukli Metame a Ochel, and Kli then is then going to be Metame Ochel. The Ocha Matamis Amashka, and Ocha is going to then in turn be Matame Mashka. If you've been following the bouncing ball, what did you see? Your Sheretz is Matame Mashka, that's one. The Kli is two. Kli is Matame Ocha, that's three. And Ocha is Matame Mashka, that's four. Vilamanu, just 1 second. Vilamanu Shalosh Tumos B'Sheretz. And then how does the Braisa end? That's three levels from the Sheretz. Okay, already, in other words, even if I weren't Rav Sheshes, which I'm not, but I know how to count. Okay? So I know that the Braisa didn't give me three, the Braisa gave me four. The Braisa clearly needs editing. There's no question about it. So, Hani Arbahain. So the Gemara notes, it's not three, it's four. Goes Mashkin Dereisha. So we're going to have to cut one of the things out. What are we going to cut out from the Braisa? The best thing to cut out is to cut out the first Mashka. So in other words, go from Sheretz straight to Kli. That's the best way to handle the Braisa. So goes Mashkin to Seifa. So the Gemara says, why not cut out Mashkin to Seifa? Meaning, look, if we're editing anyway, so why don't we take out the last Mashka? Ashka Chantama Da'amar Mashka Matame Kli El Rav Yehuda. The Gemara reminds us, yes, Rav Yehuda did say that a Mashka is Matame Kli, but Hadar Bey. But you'll remember, however, that Rav Yehuda also retracted from that position. So the best way to say the Braisa now is that I have a Sheretz being Metame Kli. A Kli then in turn is Metame Mashke. And then the Mashke in turn is Metame Ochel. Good. That's how we're going to edit the Braisa. And as Rashi points out over here, so where do we go in Tuma? How many steps do we go? Three jumps in Tuma. Who says that you go three jumps in Tuma? Rabbi Akiva. So Rashi points out, we're all going to also suggest that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Akiva, who goes three steps in Tuma. I mean, it could also be Truma as well. That's another possibility. But anyway. Yes, yeah, correct. So, so I'm right. So why don't I just. Right, yes, even by Chulin. So, Visimancha, and the Gemara says, and now, after now we added to the Braisa, what's a great way to remember how the Braisa works? Simancha Nazyasa. Just remember how you make your beer. Okay, it's only been one short year from today. Not exactly today, that I got to visit the wonderful city of St. Louis. I went to the brewery. I actually watched them make beer, but I don't remember a thing. I remember the beer testing at the end of the tour. Okay, that little I remember, but that's it though. So in other words, but the Gemara says, you want to remember all this? Remember how to make beer. Right? Rashi goes through the whole procedure. It starts with a kli. You put you put Ochel, then you put Mashke. Okay, I'm not the beer maker over here. So anyway, but that's a way to remember how we edited the Braisa. And then, in other words, we took out the first Mashke. Okay. Tanan Hasam. Good. Another Mishnah. Sher Shenitza Tanur Hapash Betochu Shniyam Mimnei Shatonu Tchila. Okay, we talk now. It's going to be one of our last topics of discussion in this whole Rabbi Chanina Tumah Tahara discussion, and that is Kli Cheres. Kli Cheres is fascinating. Kli Cheres does not conform to the regular rules of Tumah Tahara. What happens in Kli Cheres? First of all, Kli Cheres doesn't go through a mikvah. If a Kli Cheres, by the way, Kli Cheres, let me just translate, earthenware. any utensil that is earthenware. Their ovens in the good old days were all earthenware ovens. Okay, so the you fired up the oven, that means it was an earthenware container. It was an earthenware box, basically. But it's not just an oven. Anything that was made out of earthenware is now going to have different rules of Tumah Tahara. Rule number one, there's no mikvah. In other words, if earthenware a kli becomes Tameh, you break it. You touch, says the Torah. You just simply break it into pieces, and it's got to be that the pieces are not usable anymore. Okay. Rule number two regarding kli cheretz. Kli cheretz is only metameh inside, but not outside. If I take a sheretz and I touch it to the outside of kli cheretz, I'll do it all day. There's no transmission of tumah. It has to be only internally. Another rule by kli cheretz. Once it's internal, it doesn't need to even touch the walls of the oven. In other words, the way that it is transmitted is through the internal airspace of the kli cheretz. Another unusual rule by kli cheretz. We've covered the basics of kli cheretz. And now the Gemara is going to introduce us to a very interesting concept regarding kli cheretz, and that is, how exactly is that tumah transmitted in the airspace? Meaning, let's first take a look at our Mishnah in Kalim. Sheretz shenimtza b'tanur, if a sheretz is found in the oven, ha'pasha b'socho shniyah. So what degree of tumah is the bread? The bread is a sheni. Mimnesha tanur tchila. Because what happens now is that the oven is a first degree, it's a rishon, and then it passes on the tumah to the bread, and the bread is a shniyah. Now, what could we have argued?
It's not
kachim. This is regular transmission of tumah. What could we have argued? Very easily, we could have argued that the sheretz, even though it's not touching the bread, it's touching the bread. I'm not trying to confuse you, but in other words, the way that the tumah is spread in the inside of earthenware of kli cheretz is through the airspace. So one can easily imagine how when the sheretz is inside, the tumah sheretz now is basically being contaminated through the entire airspace, and it's as if the sheretz is actually touching the bread. Now, if that's so, the bread would not be a shniyah, the bread would be a rishon. But the Mishnah in Kalim says that the bread is a shniyah. So in other words, basically what it does is it forces us to understand that the way it works is that it's the sheretz being metame the kli, then the kli in turn being metame the bread. It has to be. Meaning, based on the Mishnah, now where it's reverse engineering, now we're going to look back and basically say, that's obviously how it worked. And it's not. And we're not going to make the argument that the sheretz, tumah sheretz, passes through the air, and it's as if it's actually touching the bread. So and here's the Gemara attempting to make the argument. Why not consider that the tumah is basically filling the entire airspace of the oven? And the conclusion would be that the bread is not a sheni, but the bread is a rishon. Simple argument. So the Gemara says, we just can't conclude that way. Because we learned in the Braisa, Yachol Yeh Kol HaKelem Metameh Me'avir Kli Cheretz. Look, if you're right, let's imagine the following. Inside the Kli Cheretz, I have another Kli. And what we're going to do now is just simply deposit the Cheretz in the Kli Cheretz. What should be? What should be is, again, if you want to make this argument of how now the air gets contaminated, all the airspace inside gets contaminated with the sheretz tumah, so now it should be that not only if I put food in the kli cheretz, but even if I put another kli in the kli cheretz, that kli becomes tummy. Should be.
From the outside?
No. From the inside.
The second kli is not.
Let's say the second kli that I put inside is a wood. It's not another kli cheretz. Okay, let's make it easy. In fact, the Gemara is going to say that in just a moment. Yachol ye kol akele metame me'avre kli cheretz tamu lomar. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that the airspace of the kli cheretz will only be metame food, meaning it's a juxtaposition of the pasuk regarding kli cheretz and the Torah describing and food inside the kli cheretz. Why does the Torah give the example of food inside? Because it's only food that's going to become tame inside the airspace of a kli cheres, not another kli. Why does the Torah do that? The Gemara says, I know why. It must be because it's not that the airspace now becomes all filled with the Tumah. That's not the way it works. But rather, the airspace transmits the Tumah. It's a conductor of the Tumah. So now the Sheretz is metame the kli cheres, and then the kli cheres is going to be metame whatever else is inside of it. But in other words, it's not, it's a conductor of Tumah. It's not that the Tumah is filling the air. Okay, now that we're here, now we understand why the Torah doesn't use an example of a kli inside the kli cheres. Because, ein kli metame kli. We have a basic rule regarding Tumah Tahara, that one kli cannot be metame another kli. The only thing that a kli can be metame is food. Fine. So that's the reason why we have to view, going back to the Mishnah and Kalim, the bread that's inside the kli cheres, not as a Rishon, as a Sheni. Now, if the Sheretz actually touch the bread inside, that's a different story, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about where the Sheretz is inside the airspace of the Kli Cheres, there's bread in another part of the Kli, inside the Kli Cheres, the bread is a Shnia.
So according to this,
it's a Kli that becomes...
How about if something touched the outside of the
Kli? No, then the Kli is... Oh, in other words... Once the Kli becomes Tame, then the whole Kli becomes Tame. Right.
Right. Is the outside.
Yes. Once the kli becomes tame, the entire kli becomes tame, both inside and outside. But the way to become tame is only through the interior.
But does it transmit its truma through airspace or by
Nagam? No, it transmits the tame. No, airspace is a transmitter. But that's all.
By airspace. So
right.
If the kli that's tame, if you touch it, you don't become tame unless you figure in there.
Correct. If the bread, let's say, was not touching the walls of it, but it was just inside.
That's it.
It's tame. So ochem tame me'aver kli cheres ve'ein kol akelam ve'ein kol akelam tame me'aver kli cheres. Fine. Okay. Rav Chista Rami Pischa Mishani. Okay. And now, from here basically to the end of today's daf, it's going to be a review. Okay, it's been a long week, in a lot of regards. It's been a long week of a discussion of Tumah Tahara, and so for here, basically going forward now, review. So Umi Amar Rav Yeshua Shem Ka'achas Reminu. Now, what did Rav Yeshua say at the end of our Mishnah? That will going all the way back to Daf Yudalid. Rav Yeshua said, as quoted, you can go back, that what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to burn Shumas together, but only, says Rabbi Yehoshua, sorry. All right, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yehoshua, Sarfin, Zulatma, Zulatma, Manechugal, Tluya, Valatamea. If I have Truma, which is Safik Tame, together with Truma, which is Vadai Tame, so Rabbi Yehoshua says I can burn them together. Good. That's Rabbi Yehoshua of our Mishnah. Problem is, so me and Rav Yeshua Shem Kachas Reminu Am Rav Yossi. We have now a statement made by Rav Yossi. Now remember, Rav Yossi is a generation later. Rav Yossi is of the same generation as Rav Meir. Rav Yossi is one of the students of Rabbi Akiva. And what does he say? Eina nidun dar melarayish keshid. Rabbi said, "Amahidu im alabaster shenim mabavlada tumah shesaraf masom imbaster shenim mabavatumah." If I have the meats, one is tumah and the other is tumah. One is a higher degree of tumah. So then I can burn them together. But why? Zeh tame v'zeh tame, because everything's tame. Im ala shem shenifsa b'tful yom shemalikin also b'neir shenitma b'tame meiz, zeh pasul v'zeh tame. And in the second case of our Mishnah, where I have oil, which was touched by tful yom, which is a shlishi, being burned in a lamp, which was touched by tame meiz, which is, or I should say, yeah, which is an avatama, because it's metal. And cherev hari kechal. So, and then what I'm doing now is I'm going to be elevating, I'm going to be adding to the tumah of the oil, making it a shlishi all the way to a rishon. But again, all I'm doing is adding tumah. But what you're saying is crazy. This is Rav Yossi talking. Because you're allowing the burning of safik truma with vadei truma, shema yavo aliyah v'yitarem. Safik Truma is a Safik. Eliyahu Navi may come and may declare that it to be Tahor. So how can you burn them together? There still is a requirement of Shmira, of guarding the Safik, or Mishane. Now, what's the problem? The problem is that as Rav Yossi is quoting Rav Yehoshua, it doesn't conform to the Rav Yehoshua we know from our Mishnah. Rav Yehoshua in our Mishnah says that you're allowed to burn Suffolk and Vadai Truma. As Rav Yossi is quoting Rav Yehoshua, he doesn't even allow you to burn those two together. It's a problem. So, Ha Rabbi Shimon, Va'aliba de Rabbi Yehoshua, Ha Rabbi Yossi, Va'aliba de Rabbi Yehoshua. Okay, so the Gemara simply answers, it's not an elegant answer, but two versions of Rabbi Yehoshua. Detanya, and the Gemara quotes another brayso, Yadal Shechalios B'Shabbos, Mevaron Nesakom Mefnei HaShabbos, V'Sarf and Shumat Tamei Tuliyah V'Taros Divrei Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, you're allowed to burn everything together. Again, Rav Meir Lashitaso, as we saw in our Mishnah. Rav Yossi Omer Taurus Bifnei Atzma V'Tuli Bifnei Atzma Tamei Bifnei Atzma. Rav Yossi says you got to compartmentalize, meaning we are going to burn the chametz before Pesach, but what we're going to do is burn the Tahora by itself, the Tuluya by itself, the Tamei by itself. I'm Rabbi Shimon, and here now listen carefully because this is it. I'm Rabbi Shimon. Lo nechluku Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shul, ala Torah v'ala Tamei she'ein starfin ala Tuluya she'ein starfin. Ala tuliyah v'ala tahara shitzorfin. Ama nechluku ala tuliyah v'ala tameya. What if I have suffik and tameh together? Rabbi Elazar omer tisarf zuba atzma v'zuba atzma. And here's the key line. Rabbi Yehoshua omer shteyem ka'achas. So what is our Mishnah doing? Reflecting the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehoshua as understood by Rabbi Shimon. And so that's our attempted answer of resolving the steer between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Yehoshua. Simply put, two versions of Rabbi Yehoshua. Nice answer, not an elegant answer. The Gemara points out, v'hamasis and Rabbi Yossi. But there's a fundamental problem with the answer, and that is, if you look at our Mishnah actually is given to us by Rabbi Yossi. So, hachikamar, Rabbi Yossi l'Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara just injects a little more dialogue into our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yossi says the following to Rabbi Meir, look, if you asked me, I think you're totally off base. Because I think that according to Rav Yehoshua, you're not even allowed to burn Suffolk and Tamei together. And you're talking about burning Tahora and Tamei together. So I think you're totally off base. But look, I know I'm not the only voice out there. And I'm not the only opinion out there. But even if you asked Rabbi Shimon, I feel Rabbi Shimon v'aliba de Rav Yehoshua de Mekel, ki Mekel but Teluya u'tmeya. He'll even tell you that, look, Rav Yehoshua will allow you to burn Suffolk and Tamei together. But what you're doing, Rav Meir, is just what seems to us to be totally off base. You're allowing to burn Tahora and Tamei together. Aval batar v'tamei, lo. Okay. Fine. That is good. So we ironed out the various versions of Rav Yehoshua. Let's do one more for today. Rav Yossi, Rabbi China, Rami Chuma, Apischa. Another seeming discrepancy. Omishani. Umiyamar Rav Yehoshua Shteim Ka'achas Remenu. Again, in our Mishnah, Rav Yehoshua allows you to burn the two together. On the other hand, Chavishol Truma Shanola Bosafik Toma. Rabbi Lazar Omi Maisa Menechas Bamakam Atorfa Yenechen Bamakam Amutzna. Vimaisa Maguli Yechasenu. Remember the case where we had Truma that possibly becomes Tamei. It's a state of Safek. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, you still have to safeguard. Protect it. Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, Im Haisa Menucha B'Makom Amutzah, Yinechen B'Makom Atorfa, V'im Haisa Mechusa Yigalena. So what did Rabbi Yehoshua say? Expose it. Let it become Tamei. Not that you should be Metamei with your hands, but in other words, put it in a more vulnerable scenario so that it becomes Tamei. So that's Rabbi Yehoshua and the Mishnah in Trumos. It's a jump to now say that what we can do with Safik, we can actually burn it with the Tamei, making it Tamei. The Gemara says, it's not the same. So, Grama in, B'yadayim lo. So, that Mishnah and Shumah says that what Rav Yehoshua only allows is Grama, exposing it, letting it become Tamei. And our Mishnah goes one step further, actually burning the Tamei and the Tuluya together. That's not Grama, that's B'yadayim. So, Ha Rabbi Shimon, Aliba de Rav Yehoshua, Ha Rav Yossi, Aliba de Rav Yehoshua. And again, not an elegant answer, but basically, you're right. Rav Yehoshua is being reported by two different Tanaim, later generation Tanaim, two different versions of Rav Yehoshua. Okay, we'll stop over here, we'll pause over here, tomorrow we'll pick it up. Again, we're just basically recapping, reviewing a lot of what we learned over the past week. And tomorrow, Mirza Hashem, we're going to start the second parak of Pesachim.